Hardly a week goes by, in some cases it may seem almost on a daily basis, that in the news there was some mention of the Federal Reserve. I think we all understand that the Federal Reserve is a very important entity, but if we stopped people on the street and we started asking them questions about what the Federal Reserve actually did, I expect that a lot of people, if they were honest, would say, well, you know, I don't really know. I'm not sure. And I'll count myself as one of those people who doesn't really think I have a very firm grasp on what the Fed does. Well, perhaps at the end of the program today, you will feel otherwise. We have two guests with us this morning, and they are the co-authors of a book titled The Idiot's Guide, The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Federal Reserve. It is a paperback book published by Alpha Books. Our guests are Preston Martin and Lita Epstein. Preston Martin served as the vice chair of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors under Paul Volcker during the Reagan administration. And Lita Epstein is a writer, and she has authored a couple of the books in this series, including The Complete Idiot's Guide to Social Security and The Complete Idiot's Guide to Tax Breaks and Deductions. So obviously she specializes in writing about economic and financial topics. As we talk in this part of Focus 580, of course, questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Mr. Martin, hello.
Hello there.
And Ms. Epstein.
Hi.
Thank you both very much.
Thanks for having us.
We appreciate it. I think we can talk about a number of things in detail, but I guess maybe I'll ask the question that's posed by the title of the very first chapter, and that is why should anybody care about the Fed? You know, why would you say that if you have no idea what the Fed does, maybe you ought at least have a vague grasp of what the Fed does? Why does it matter?
Well, it matters because the Federal Reserve System is the most important shaper of the U.S. economy in terms of prices and in terms of economic growth. It is their responsibility given them by the Congress and expanded by several of the sitting chairmen of the Fed and their colleagues on the Federal Open Market Committee.
The current chairman, Alan Greenspan, and he's been around for a while, and he's makes regular appearances on Capitol Hill and talking with members of Congress about the economy. He's sort of the public face of the Fed. There are also then, in addition to the chairman, there is a board of governors. There are seven people. How does one get to be on the Fed? Who decides who these people are?
The President of the United States, as soon as there is an opening, that is to say an appointment that can be made, interviews a number of people. I was one of three that Ronald Reagan, then president, interviewed, chooses one, submits his or her name to the Senate, the United States Senate, which either confirms or rejects that person. So it is a combination of the administrative side of government, the White House, that is, and the Congress.
But there also, I think, is the involvement of usually the New York Stock Exchange, the key leaders up in the New York financial markets.
Yes, that's correct.
Get involved in making recommendations as well as other members of the board. So it does get, the president definitely wants to satisfy the financial markets when he makes a choice.
Chairman Greenspan he was appointed in 1987, so he's been there for some time. And I know that some people recently, and maybe this is the kind of thing that people talk about on and off all the time, some people have said maybe there should be a limit on the number of terms the chairman can serve. And there are probably some people who think that Mr. Greenspan has been chairman too long. And I wonder, I mean, not specifically how you feel necessarily about Alan Greenspan, but I'm particularly interested in Mr. Martin, your thought on this idea of should there be limits on the amount of time that an individual may serve as the chairman?
Well, my experience over about 30 years of working with the succeeding chairman of the Fed is such that my response from my experience would be no. as long as monetary policy is functioning, as long as the chairman can guide the board of governors, the other six governors, as long as that chairman can communicate to the financial markets. Lita was quite right. The financial markets deserve quite a bit of attention and receive it from the Fed. But Bill Martin served almost as long now as Greenspan. I knew Bill. I worked with Bill when I was chairman of the other central bank, the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, as it was then called. And I didn't think Bill should resign, and I don't think Alan Greenspan should resign, as long as monetary policy is functioning.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that before the market crash, everyone absolutely was horrified at the thought that Greenspan wouldn't be reappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just when, with the market conditions right now being what they are, that people are starting to raise questions. But market and monetary policy shouldn't be part of the political whims. It needs to be something much more stable.
Yeah. Well, given the fact that the members of the board are appointed, is it really possible to divorce politics from either the business of making appointments to the board or the business or the way that the members of the board go about doing what they do?
Oh, I assure you, from the three government positions I held, Savings and Loan Commissioner of the State of California, the first time that half of them were failing, Chairman of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board when we invented Freddie Mac, don't sue me for that one now, and the 4 years I served as Vice Chairman, when there were four Reagan appointees, we changed monetary policy substantially. But did we do it because the White House gave us a phone call? Certainly not.
The chairman of the Fed is required periodically to make appearances and on Capitol Hill to report on the progress of the economy. And people definitely listen to what he says. And depending upon what he says, if he says, I think things are going well, that's going to have a certain effect. And if he says things are not going so well, if he comments on unnatural exuberance in the markets, you know, that's going to make people go a certain way. And I guess that would lead some people to think that the Fed and the chairman specifically have the power to actually move the economy. And I think that's probably a great exaggeration of the power that the Fed has, but it's no doubt that there certainly has a kind of a psychological or emotional power, because depending on what he says, you know, people may do one thing or do something else. So what can you say about just what sort of influence the Fed has on the American economy?
Well, the influence is basically the changes in the money supply is broadly defined, and the activities in the capital markets with regard to interest rates, buying and selling huge amounts of treasuries, as you and most of your listeners are aware, the Fed, by creating reserve deposits of their member institutions in the various Federal Reserve banks, can do that very easily by, if they want to increase those reserves, as deposits are called, just go buy $100 billion worth of treasuries over the next 30 days. So the Fed has that influence, and when there is a crisis, when long-term credit is failing, or after the 9/11 crises, the Fed has the responsibility and discharges it. You're right, primarily through the Fed Bank of New York, but also the other 11 banks, to keep the economy running, so to speak.
And I think that this that Greenspan has been much more public about Fed position and Fed direction than probably any other prior chairman has been. And I think that's really helped to stabilize the market, because there aren't any great shocks right after the meeting. People probably expect what's going to be happening at the meeting 3 to 4 weeks going into it. And I think that really has helped to stabilize to a greater extent. What do you think, Preston?
Oh, I think there's no question about it. I have known Alan Greenspan for 35 years, And let me tell you both, and your audience, he is one of the greatest handshakers. When he goes to a meeting, everyone is shaking hands with Alan. His inputs are substantial, and he is much aware of the impact of his wording, speaking for the Federal Open Market Committee, and we have all witnessed this stance taken in August, September, and October, in which the Fed has said repeatedly that low interest rates can be maintained for a, quote, considerable period, end quote. Now, in the 51 months I served there, none of us used words like that. So you can tell they're communicating policy.
Well, it's also interesting to see when you see Greenspan speak in front of Congress. He's always sure to give both the Democrats and Republicans something that they can take away and be happy about. Hmm. He really does balance out his testimony very well, and that's part of playing the politics.
Let me introduce again our two guests, and we have a caller we'll get right to. We're talking with Preston Martin and Lita Epstein. Preston Martin served as the vice chair of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors during the Reagan administration, at the time when the chairman was Paul Volcker. And Lita Epstein is a writer and has contributed to this book we're talking about here, The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Federal Reserve. She's also worked on two of the other books in this series, one that's about Social Security and one that's about tax breaks and deductions. And it's a paperback book. It's published by Alpha Books and not terribly expensive. So if you're interested in reading about the workings of the Fed, you can go out there and look for the book. And, of course, here on the program, questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller to start in Champaign County, line one. Hello.
Hi. I've always thought that Greenspan's an sort of equal opportunity mumbler or obfuscator because he gives direction considerable length. This means through the next election, at least, that sort of thing. I'm very skeptical of this, and don't expect agreement. But maybe you should be worried about being sued for Freddie Mac. I don't know. Considering, you know, you mentioned the stock market and the exchange, and you know, there are calls for it to be demutualized so that it isn't an insider's club. But for somebody who watches this from, you know, levels of watching the mortgage rates and that sort of thing, this is really an insider's club, and it's protecting the bond holders and it's and the bankers more primarily. But I'm sure you hear this populist rant from time to time. Greider and others have said it, but what I look at is how it's done elsewhere, and it's kind of bittersweet that in Germany, where they had much more than Humphrey Hawkins and the first thing that the Red Green Alliance did when they got in power, and I think it's overcompensating basically, is they gave the similar kind of power to the Bundesbank that the Federal Reserve has now, and as far as setting rates and stuff. And so basically, how do you respond to a populist rant about how this is all really insider stuff, and that there needs to be some kind of stronger balancing for the common people, and there needs to be more of what I would regard as the populist politics put into the equation, not the kind of politics that does go on as far as controlling the rates and motivating the Federal Reserve open market meetings and et cetera. So I don't know how coherent that was, but I think it probably rings a bell in a lot of people's minds out there.
Well, I would. I'll start with one answer, and Lita, I'm sure we'll have a supportive answer. The notion that the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Open Market Committee are emperors of the Western world is false, because each of those 12 Federal Reserve banks have a board of directors, an advisory committee, maybe a couple of other advisory committees, and the president of that bank, before he goes to Washington and votes, if he's a voter, on the Federal Open Market Committee, has to receive the information from those sources in his or her district. And Lita has done such a good job in our book of pointing out that you can become a member of the advisory committee, or if you've been very successful financially, you can go on that board of directors. Tell that bank president what should be done about the economy. Control his or her vote when they go to Washington and vote. And Lita also points out how college people can be interns at the local Fed bank. In other words, anyone who is distressed by the apparent pyramid at the Fed should participate and pull down part of that pyramid.
Nothing you said merely contradicts the idea that it's really plutocracy, and I'm going to go down to my bank later, but I don't think they're going to give me much standing to say that my mortgage rate should be, 0.75 lower than what they're going to offer me.
And see if that bank has an advisory committee. You could go on and get a little more leverage on your local banker.
Yeah, the landed gentry
gets those positions. You've got a financial background, and you sound as though you have quite a bit. Why don't you go on the board of directors of that Fed bank? What are you waiting for?
Nothing you said. It gives me any kind of confidence that my opinion is going to be registered at all. I think that there are salutary effects by like the CalPERG and groups like that that are representing the interests of pension funds. But most of those are actually not very populist either. They're actually subverted and controlled. I think I have a better position to try to exert, better opportunity to exert position through something like that, through my union, as opposed to going down and asking the banker to please take my plea into consideration the next time you talk to your Federal Reserve Bank, who talks to their Federal Reserve Bank, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to hang up and listen to see what else happens. Thanks.
All right. Ms. Epstein, do you want to weigh in on this at all?
Well, I think that it's true that he as an individual, if he doesn't have banking experience, isn't going to be able to serve on the board. But it's also true that there are union heads that are serving on various federal boards, Federal Reserve boards throughout the country. So that's one way of getting more involved, is to find out which union, whether your union is represented, if not represented, how they can get represented locally on those boards, because they definitely look for a labor viewpoint on the various federal boards. So I think that it's taking it to the negative and saying we can't do anything, there's no way of getting involved, when there are ways of getting involved, you just have to make the efforts.
Let me just ask here a basic question, as I think that when people do think about the Federal Reserve, they think about interest rates. And though here, that is to the individual consumer, what they're thinking about is what it's going to cost them to buy a house, what the mortgage rate is there, or what's, the interest rate they're paying on their credit card. It's those kinds of interest rates. Now, the kind of interest rates we're talking about the Federal Reserve, that's a different thing. The Federal Reserve doesn't set the interest rates that I'm going to pay on my mortgage, but there is a relationship between what they do and what I pay on my mortgage. So let's talk about that. What it is the Federal Reserve does in terms of interest rates, and how that trickles down to the interest rate that, as a regular level consumer, somebody like me gets.
Well, essentially what they're setting are the rates that the banks can borrow at. And then the banks, of course, want to make a profit on top of that. And so the banks set their rates based on the rates that are being set by the Fed. So essentially there is a direct connection. If there's a 0.5% increase at the Fed level, there's going to be an increase in consumer borrowing. Mm-hmm. Maybe not exactly the same amount, possibly more, possibly less. It then again also depends on what's happening in the market, because it depends what other banks are doing. If all the banks raise it by 0.5%, when the Fed raises it by 0.5%, of course everybody's going to pay the same difference. But sometimes, because of competition, it may not be raised that much as banks compete.
So
it depends upon what the And that's one of the things that, Greenspan was speaking about today when he was speaking at Security Industries Association, where he talked about we can keep the interest rates low, but a big problem that's coming up behind that are going to be the budget deficits. And as the budget deficits grow, the federal government's going to be borrowing more and more money, which means there's going to be less money available to borrow. And as there's less money available to borrow, obviously interest rates are going to go up, even if the Fed does nothing.
So here, just to make sure that I understand and people listening understand, basically what we're talking about is that when I go to the bank to borrow money, some of the money that they're going to lend me, they are going to have to borrow.
Exactly.
And the interest rate they charge me will depend upon the interest rate they have to pay on the money that they are going to borrow.
Exactly. Yeah, but let me inject another variable into this well-spoken equation. The other aspect of monetary policy is the growth in the money supply. The currencies, the deposits, even the money market instruments and so forth. And the Fed greatly affects, almost controls, the growth in the money supply. Think a minute of why the economy is growing at a good rate. Think a minute about why interest rates stay low. The Federal Reserve System has been increasing the money supply at 6 or 7 or 8% on an annual basis at a time when the real economy is growing 1% or 2%. So the Fed is pumping that liquidity out. And they do it, of course, by buying Treasury securities, paying for them by reserve deposits, which an individual bank can multiply by 10. The reserve requirement is 10%. So if the Fed, buys $1 billion worth of securities around in the various markets, then $1 billion worth of reserves is suddenly popped up on the books of the banks. And they, in turn, can look at that home mortgage of yours, and if you want to refinance it, they'd be glad to at a lower rate because they're getting such a flood of liquidity into their own coffers.
So the Fed has this ability to affect the availability of money, which in turn has some effect on the economy and its pace. How is it that the Fed goes about making these decisions to decide about the availability of money or what it's going to cost people to borrow money?
Well, they make those decisions bottom up, which is why I was cajoling one of your callers to become an advisor to the Fed bank in his district. If you're in New England, go on the advisory committee of the Boston Bank. If you're in jolly old Texas, go on the advisory, or if you're a successful businessman, on the board of directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, because, again, that bank president has to listen to you, and when he goes back to Washington, let's suppose he's a voting member of the FOMC right now, 5 of the 12 bank presidents get to vote, he's going to vote your way.
Good story you might want to tell, Preston, is about what happened with the housing market when you were on the board and how the builders got involved in making sure the rates were dropped.
Yes, I was very fortunate to have fellow board members appointed by President Reagan. Soon there were 4 of us he had appointed and been confirmed by the Senate. So when the Federal Reserve Board met, we had 4 of the 7 votes. And several of us had come from the housing markets. I not only started Freddie Mac, as it's called, but also a private mortgage insurance company and whatnot and whatnot. And housing, encouraged by the interest rate policy of the Fed, has been the strongest in decades and decades. There are more housing sales. There are more people getting additional funds from refinancing. And believe me, in those meetings at the Fed in Washington, the staff member who reports on housing and the mortgage markets is listened to intensely.
Let me ask one other question that we get some other callers I want to get to, and that is that deals with inflation. Because once again, I think if you just have a basic understanding of the Fed and what it does, you understand that, well, what the Fed has something to do with inflation. That is, one of their important missions is to try to curb inflation. What way does the Federal Reserve do that?
Well, the relationship between the rate of growth of the money supply and the price inflation measures is a close one, so that curbing inflation, for example, in the 1970s, the Fed was concentrating on other factors, the result was that in changing the money supply, the Fed raises or lowers the nominal national income, that is, production multiplied by the price level. Now, it takes 6 to 9 months for that to hit, but believe me, it hits.
And then basically, I think what people see when it comes to the idea of controlling inflation is by raising the interest rates, increasing the cost of borrowing tends to slow down spending, which then tends to slow down the pressure on the rise in prices, because there aren't as many people buying, so there's more competition and prices get lowered.
We have several callers, and maybe I should introduce again our guests for this part of Focus 580. Preston Martin served as the vice chair of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors during the Reagan administration at the time when Paul Volcker was the chairman. And Lita Epstein is a writer and has contributed to several books in this series, The Complete Idiot's Guide, all of them on financial topics. The one we are talking about here, The Guide to the Federal Reserve. She's also written one dealing with Social Security and another dealing with tax breaks and deductions, and is out there in the bookstore if you want to look at it. Questions welcome here too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The next caller in line is in Urbana, and line 2. Hello.
Yeah, I had three questions ready to go here, but when you're talking about getting on an advisory board, could you be more specific? What do I ask to be on?
Well, the next time you see in your newspaper or on the web, if you're a good user of your computer, that the president of where are you located?
Illinois.
In Illinois, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago is making a presentation. Go meet the man or the woman that is the current president. Get to know him, advise him about what's going on in the Middle West economy, and after a while, either go on the advisory or on the board of directors of that Federal Reserve Bank.
And I can be just an ordinary Joe Schmo and do that?
As long as you are articulate, you remind that president that you guys are pumping that money supply pump too fast. That's not the way to go. Let me tell you about where I work and what it's doing to our company.
Okay. All right, here are my questions then. The first one, I don't know to what extent the Fed might be involved in the creation or starting up of a new bank. And I was wondering if you could tell me about that. Are they involved or not?
Well, they're involved because the Federal Reserve Board is the umbrella regulator. That means that it is the number one regulator dealing with the FDIC, the Office of Thrift Supervision, and the other entities. So their role is on the regulatory side, particularly for state licensed banks. The examiners from the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago will come trotting into that bank along with your superintendent of banks of the state of Illinois. So yes, the Fed is the regulator's regulator, so to speak. I'm being a little wise guy here.
Well, I'm just curious why why there aren't more minority banks. Is it really that hard to start a new bank? I mean, if I had $100,000 Is it likely I could succeed or not?
If you had $100,000 and you were willing to invest that in a new bank to be chartered in one of the older neighborhoods, get in touch with the Fed of Chicago. Find out who is their staff person who deals with this question. Talk to him or her about how you could raise additional capital from other people that want to fix up those the South Chicago communities that are not looking too well. There's bank after bank after bank that is chartered. And one of the organizations that is very active in this is Operation Hope, capital H-O-P-E, headquartered in Los Angeles. But there are a number of organizations, Neighborhood Housing Services of America, Social Compact. Get in touch with some of these organizations that are working in the older neighborhoods. I wish you had been on that bus tour that we made of South Central Los Angeles a few years ago, pointing out to the bankers and the builders and so forth how L.A. had cleaned up its own mess there without waiting for the federal government to come running in with the broom.
Let me add in something here. I was just, while you were talking, went over to the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago site and found out that they are having a state fiscal forum at the Reserve Bank on November 12th. And it will be various speakers, including the head of the Fed there.
Great.
So you may want to go to, if you go to the website, www.chicagofed.org, under news and events, you'll see that there's a conference and there's contact information if you want to sign up for that conference.
Thanks for the info. That sounds like it'd be a fun outing. I mean, seriously.
It's being sponsored by the Fed of Chicago and the National Tax Association. Sounds like it'll be a good conference.
Okay. And number two, second question I was interested in is that in the world today, I guess the big central banks are the European Central Bank and our Fed. And I'm sure Mr. Martin's aware that this summer Paul Volcker came out in favor of a single currency and a world central bank, which brings up the question: if the Fed, or a related idea is whether the Fed is really doing the nation good, or is it doing the bankers good, or what's going on here? Can you kind of is there any really strong argument against adopting single currency for the entire world and going with dissolving the Fed and the European Central Bank and coming up with a world central bank?
Well, we have a couple of world central banks and they have very spotty records. There is an organization called the World Bank, their activities in places like Pakistan and India and so forth has not been record breaking. So we have a World Bank. The way the central bankers deal with each other and try to influence each other's policies is in the meeting of the central bankers. The Bank of England, oh boy, is an important one. Our Fed, the Euro chief, which there is a brand new one, thank God, because the previous one did not have a marvelous track record. And they meet in the ugliest town in Switzerland. It's called Basel. And I used to commute over for those meetings when I was vice chairman. And the central bankers sit down at the same table and talk about their own policies and where the world is going and so forth. So you've already got two failures in the World Bank and in the International Monetary Fund, and some failures and successes in the central bankers getting together in Basel.
We're coming into about our last 10 minutes, and we want to make sure that we get some other callers here. In fact, the lines are full, so I want to get on to some other folks. The next person in line is in Champaign and in on line number 3. Hello.
Good morning. Not to get too polemical, not to get into much of an argument with you about this, but in general, I go with the statement that the U.S. economic system is a crooked card game. And I'm not directing this to you personally, but the indictment of capitalism, you know, unrestrained, is pretty well documented. Now, we've got a sort of regulation on laissez-faire capitalism in the United States, but the big indictment is still that 10 or 15% of the population is left out and in prison and in ghettos, et cetera. And now, what I thought I maybe should address specifically, are you concerned at all, or do you see any role for the Federal Reserve Bank in terms of how the economic, the wealth is distributed in the country? That is to say, like, you know, it's growing, the disparity is growing between the top 2% and the bottom 24% is growing, and do you have any feelings about that, or I'll leave you to answer that. Thanks.
Well, certainly. Any time you take 3 government jobs, as I was wild enough to do, one of the aspects of public policy that you emphasize is the moderate and low-income families and individuals, and how you can, and as a government person, you can further their access to home ownership. How you can get volunteers to educate young people who don't speak very good English and who live in these poor communities, and how you can otherwise involve families in doing some financial planning that makes sense. And in our book, The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Federal Reserve, if you read it carefully, you'll find that that Lita and I have laid out some ways that you and your family, if you're a moderate income person, even a low income person, can get involved in fixing up that community. Community service is the aspect that you get the most satisfaction out of as a participating American. And that can be done and should be done. Start small businesses in those old neighborhoods with people that have been working all their lives for some other business, so that the moderate income families don't have to drive 14 miles to buy their groceries. Start a grocery store.
I mean, I can understand the call's frustration when you have, especially the scandal that's now breaking on the mutual fund industry, which is the one place where most of your low income people get any kind of a share in the market. And to see the kind of abuses that we're seeing in that have been exposed in that scandal, listening to the Senate hearing, there definitely needs to be some changes in how those things are managed in this market.
Let's talk with someone else again in Champaign, line 1. Hello.
Hi. 2 points. One of the previous callers was careful to not disagree with you in a nasty way, and I hope I won't do that, but I have to disagree with you. You said that Alan Greenspan early on in the interview today doesn't really have a big impact as an individual. You know, he's certainly the head of the he is a figurehead. Well, every time Greenspan, if you'll pardon the expression, passes gas, there's a major impact in the markets, and I think it's a completely unrealistic belief that he doesn't have a big impact as one human being. Now, whether or not it's a good impact or a bad impact may be a second story, but certainly I don't think our system is designed to have one person having that big of an impact. Second thing, and this is the major point, you have very blithely talked about getting involved with the local reserve boards and whatnot, you know, regional reserve boards. And I think you're being completely unrealistic. You've talked about knowing Greenspan for 30 years. You've talked about being appointed by President Reagan. I don't think you're really boots on the ground, as the saying is currently. The fact is that the system is designed against the individual. It's designed to specifically serve institutional investors. The idea that individual citizens can get involved and make an impact is ridiculous. That's just not the way our economy works. And the fact that you obviously believe it, I mean, I guess that's a big compliment to democracy that you're willing to believe that, but it's just not reality. It's
well, don't reject your need to participate in furthering the older neighborhoods, the moderate and low-income households. I know I'm repeating myself, but I'm urging you to get involved in organizations that are fixing up those lower-income people. Operation Hope. Shall I name them again? There are all kinds of organizations. What are you doing with your extra time? How can you justify not serving on one of those committees?
First of all, you're accusing me of not being involved.
Yes, sir.
And you don't know me. You don't know me at all.
Are you involved?
Yes, I am.
Respond.
As a matter of fact, I'm a business owner. I have my own business. I support various organizations through the work that I do. So I am, in fact, involved. And the fact is, when you look at just how the system is set up, to be biased in favor of the big fish, whether it's an individual rich person or whether it's a company that's large, you know the system is biased towards the large. It's not biased toward the average person. You talked about helping lower class, middle class people. Well, look at the way our whole government is set up right now. It's set up to help the rich, not the moderately wealthy, not even the poor. And your opinion so far has been so blatantly positive toward, oh, yeah, just get involved. Just get involved. I'm sorry, that's not realistic. Anyway, I've said my piece. I respect you. I appreciate it. I'm going to look at your book and take a good read and see the details. But I think you're being unrealistic and very patronizing to some of the callers previously who have brought up complaints, and your response is just, quote-unquote, get involved. I don't think that's really called for. Anyway, I have my piece. You can have yours. Thanks.
All right. Well, anything you want to say, Mr. Martin?
Well, I think what I heard him say is I won't get involved. And I'm sorry to hear that. I really am. Have you been to South Central Chicago? Have you been to South Central Los Angeles? Have you been up to Harlem where we have set up a neighborhood rehabilitation centers? I won't say get involved again because you're getting bored with it.
Well,
it's interesting to see on the Chicago board. I was just looking to see who was on the board of directors there. One person is Connie Evans, who's president and chief executive of WSEP Ventures, which is involved in social change and economic development in low-income communities. So they do have representative from that side on the board of directors at that Fed.
We'll try and get one more caller here, Bloomington, Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hi. Could I ask about productivity and how the Fed should respond? This morning we learned that productivity soared again. Some say that this increase in productivity that is coming comes from simply working employees harder. Could it be that employers see the tax cut stimulus to the economy as temporary, so that employers foresee a decline in demand after the stimulus wears out? So they're not hiring more employees. They think that the demand will decline after the tax cut stimulus. They won't need those employees. They don't want to hire employees now, only to find the demand down after the tax stimulus wears out. And you get my point. And how should the Fed respond to that, or can it?
Well, the first point you need to concentrate on is to read current articles in the various newspapers who emphasize what a tremendous gain we have had in productivity in recent years, and the use of the intelligence, the computers and all the rest of the gadgetry that are being used now. We are not the only society that is struggling with unemployment. The same thing is true, brace yourself now, in China, where so many outsourcings by American companies are using labor forces in China. Productivity is on an upward spiral that will benefit all of us.
So you don't agree with some that say that a lot of employers are simply demanding more from their employees, getting greater productivity from them in order to avoid making new hires because they foresee that after the tax stimulus is gone, there'll be a decline in demand. They won't need those employees any longer, and they don't want to. They want don't want to just hire new employees and then have to lay them off again.
Well, the thesis that there will be a decline in demand longer term, not just a decline in demand, for 6 months or 9 months or something like that. Remember that the expansion prior to this one lasted for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And this was at a time when more and more companies were using computers and so forth.
Yes.
No, the question is, get the training of those youngsters so they can use those computers and those other electronic machines, quote unquote, and keep our productivity rising in this country. We've done that before.
Well, I agree with you. Increased productivity is a good thing, and thank you very much for your input.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. I guess we're about at the point where we're going to have to stop. I just want to give you the opportunity. Is there some last thought? Obviously, there are a lot of things that we have not talked about. Is there a last thought you'd like to leave with folks?
Well, let me just start and say that remember that in the crises that have occurred in financial markets here and overseas, that the Federal Reserve and the other central banks step up there. Well, let me use 9/11 as an example. When 9/11, when those buildings were struck in New York, and those 3,000 people plus were killed, in the following day, there were millions of people that went to their local bank or their thrift institution or their credit union and said, "Hey, I've got to have some cash here. I've got to have some money. This is a crisis time." Well, what did the Fed do? The Fed turned on the money pump in the billions and billions and billions of dollars here and in the UK and for the Euro Central Bank, and pumped out so many billions of dollars of additional liquidity that there weren't runs on the banks. There weren't a crisis, monetary financial crisis the next day, even though the world had been assaulted by those terrorists.
Yeah. We're going to have to stop there, and I just want to say to both of you, thank you very much. Preston Martin, thank you.
Thank you.
And, you're very welcome.
And Lita,
a pleasure, as you can tell.
Lita Epstein, thank you very much, too.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
The book, again, is The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Federal Reserve. If you'd like to have some basic insight into the Fed and what it does, you can go out and take a look at the book.